This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The court decides. Drill, baby, drill.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in for Bill Radke. A federal appeals court denied the Obama administration's request to extend a six-month moratorium on deepwater drilling. The president said extending the ban would help prevent another oil leak, but oil companies said the ban is too broad and that it would cost thousands of jobs. Meanwhile, BP has said it will pay for the oil disaster in the Gulf, and it's asking its partners for help. Anadarko Petroleum and Mitsui Oil Exploration. The companies own about one-third of the destroyed well, and BP says that means they should pay one-third of the cost. Chrissy Clark has more.
The bills look like your cell phone bill. Kind of. Except the amount due is more than $270 million and 9 cents, in the case of Anadarko. Matsui's tab is for another $100 million or so. The bills cover things like drilling relief wells, paying out claims for Gulf residents, and something called intangible.
They're not my clients, but I wouldn't rush to pay that check.
That's Joe Grunfest, a professor of business law at Stanford. So far, BP's partners will neither confirm nor deny whether they'll pay the bills. But Grunfest says there are two reasons why they probably won't. First, they want a court to decide whether they're liable before they pay the tab. Second, not sharing the spill-related costs is one more way to distance themselves from BP and protect the future of their industry. Grunfest says they're trying to send a message.
We should not shut down offshore drilling. Rather, we should make sure that no one drills the way BP drills because the other drillers know how to do it safely.
Payment on the bills is due early next week. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
The Obama administration has been putting a lot of pressure on China to let its currency appreciate in value, but it stopped short of calling China a currency manipulator. The Treasury Department issued the report on China's currency yesterday. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us now, live from Washington. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Nancy, does this mean the president has decided not to punish Beijing for keeping its currency so low?
Sort of. The Treasury Department is required by Congress to produce this report on global currencies every 6 months. The report has kind of evolved into a way to pressure other countries on their currencies. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is following a two-track approach. As you said, he's not branding China a currency manipulator, but he also says Treasury will, quote, closely and regularly monitor China's currency, the yuan. Now, China did loosen the yuan's peg to the dollar recently, but the yuan has risen less than 1% against the dollar since then.
Now, Nancy, why is the value of the yuan so important to the U.S.? The story pops up a lot.
Oh, it sure does. And it's kind of hard to understand, but if China's currency is really low against the dollar, Chinese exports are cheaper than U.S. exports. U.S. companies say that gives China an unfair advantage. Now, some members of Congress are being more hard-nosed about this than the Treasury Department is. Senator Charles Schumer, a New York Democrat, says it's going to take an act of Congress to, in his words, do the obvious and call China out for its currency manipulation.
What is the administration's next step with China?
Well, the next global currency report is due this October. Plus, finance ministers from the world's leading economies are going to meet this fall, and the subject of China's currency is sure to come up.
Without a doubt. Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
The markets are looking good this morning. China's Shanghai Composite Index added 2.3%. Tokyo's Nikkei Index jumped 0.5%. Paris's CAC 40 is up 0.5%. Germany's DAX up 0.3%. Yesterday, U.S. markets saw big gains. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 1.2% to close at 10,138.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation Defender, protecting online privacy by monitoring the web and removing your personal data from websites that sell it. ReputationDefender.com/market. And by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com.
In an effort to get their balance sheets back in the black, U.S. automakers have been scrapping some underperforming models, among them the Mercury. Ford has announced it will stop production of that model later this year. Contributor Hank Rosenfeld has this ode to the car that helped define him.
My mom drove a Mercury, and so did my dad and my sister and our next-door neighbor in Detroit, Mr. Krause. In fact, every day it seemed he was out in front of his house hosing down that 1963 Monterey. The first Mercury was designed by Henry Ford's son, Edsel, in 1939. Fancier than a Ford, but actually with the same body as a Ford, Mercuries were for the expanding American middle-class market. The biggest seller was the Grand Marquis, which was more like a junior Lincoln. Back then, Mercury was branded the Big M, with models like the Montego, the Montclair, the Meteor. And it was the sponsor of the Ed Sullivan Show.
Now, get set for a thrill, because we're going to put you in the driver's seat of a dream car.
Back when we dreamed big in this country, I learned to drive in my mom's Lincoln Mercury Colony Park station wagon with the fake wood paneling and the third seat in the back facing backwards. Instead of watching the world go by, you could feel yourself pulling away from it. 1978 was Mercury's biggest year. It sold nearly 600,000 cars. The heyday when Farrah Fawcett did their TV commercials. Now Farrah Fawcett's gone, and so is this.
Cougar. At the sign of the cat.
I'll never forget my Cougar, 1973, with the flip-up headlights hidden in the grill. I get into that bucket seat, and I'm gone. But sales last year for Mercurys were down to 92,299. The total market share was less than 1%. Yeah, Mercury's just too retrograde. Growing up in Detroit, you pay attention to these things. They're part of who you are. Well, who we were, anyway.
And finally, the latest trend for the rich and famous, defaulting. The New York Times reports wealthy Americans have stopped paying their mortgages at a very high rate. About 1 in 7 homeowners with a loan of more than $1 million is seriously delinquent. That's roughly double the rate of delinquency on smaller home loans. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.